And we're holding page 8 in Yuma, top of the page, Oisches. We learned yesterday that how the Shlokish blamed the Jews of Bavel for not all coming in the time of Ezra, that he says because of that, therefore the second Mishmikdash had no permanence to it and was eventually destroyed. So now the Gemara continues on that, continues telling that story. Ki also the Kamed Rabbi Yochanan, when Rish Lakish went to see Rabbi Yochanan, Amalei, then Rabbi Yochanan explained to him, Lav Hainu Taima. That's actually not the reason. Don't blame the Jews of Babel, even if the Inami Sliku Kulu Rime Ezra, even if all of them had come to Eretz Yisrael in Ezra's times, beginning of the second Mishnah Mikdash, Lo Shav Yashchina B'Mikdash Shein.
You're on the wrong Mishnah.
This is Averin. Even if all of them had come up in Ezra's times, beginning of the second Mishmikdash, lo shavi shchina b'mikdasheni, but I have a midi, the shchina still wouldn't have rested over there, and it still wouldn't have been anything comparable to the first Mishmikdash. Now, there is a concept, despite what Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here, there is a concept that Mephoshim mentioned, that if the Jewish people had been Zoicha at that time, then the Bismikdash they built would have been the eternal one. But Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here, it's not so much a matter of that all of them came up. It's whether all of them came up or not. It's rather a matter of what Zchusim they had. Because they had done certain Averis, including intermarriage and others, during Golus Babel, therefore, to begin with, they didn't have the Zchus that the second Bismikdash would be built in a way that would be permanent. Dichtiv. Namely, like this, the Pasuk says, Noach benches Yefes. He says, Yafta lekim leYefes, Hashem will expand Yefes, the Yishkoin ba'ol is shame, and he'll dwell in the tents of shame, and the Hichnan Evad Lama, and the Pasuk finishes off that Knan will be a servant to them then. So that means, what's this Yafta lekim leYefes? The word yaft can have a few different meanings. It can mean to expand, and Rashi mentions on the pasuk that that's what it means. But it can also mean meloshin yoifi, meloshin beautiful. Elsewhere, the Gemara mentions, for example, that it means in Megillah, the Gemara mentions it means the beautiful language of Yefes, the Greek language, which was a very beautiful language, is specifically to be used for Torah, and that was the basis on which they translated the Targum HaShivim. But here, the Gemara is taking it in a different sense. Talking about the Beis Mikdash, which is the most beautiful place, Mitzi and Mechlau Yofi, Marashal refers to the Pasuk, Yefei Noif Mesois Kol Ha'aretz. So the point is, Afagab de Yafta Lekim the Yefes, even though Hashem beautified Yefes and made it possible for Yefes, and that Yefes was the one who sponsored, or descendant of Yefes was the one who sponsored the building of the Beis Mikdash, nevertheless, Eina Shechina Shoda Ela Ba'ale Shem, the Shechina would rest only in the tents that were built by descendants of Shem. Meaning, Shlomo HaMelech, the first Mishmikdash, was built by Shlomo, who's descended from Shem, as are the whole Jewish people. So therefore, the second Mishmikdash was sponsored by Kodesh, who, as the Gemara is going to demonstrate now, is descended, he and his whole nation, the Persians, Iranians, are descended from Yefes, and therefore, the Shechina couldn't rest in that Mishmikdash anyway, even if all the Jews had come up. Why Aholei, by the way, is because you have not just the Beis Mikdash, also the Mishkan in the desert, the one in Shiloh, etc., were all built by Bnei Shem, and were all built by Jews who descended from Shem, and therefore the Shechina rested in them, but the second Beis Mikdash, not. So, Parsoi Minolan Miyefes Kasu. So where do we know that the Persians come specifically from Yefes? So like this, Dichtiv, you have in Parshas Noach, when it lists the children of Yefes and the nations that descended from them, Bnei Yefes Gomer Umogog Umodai V'Yovin V'Suvol Umeshach V'Siras. So now we're going to go through one by one and identify them with nations that were known in those times, where we're going to say one of them is the Persians. So each of them, what it is, that each of them were going to identify them by the country that they founded, meaning there was a man by the name of Gomer, who was a son of Yefes, and he and his descendants founded a country which the Gemara is going to identify over here by its name, and so forth with all the other ones. So Gomer zu Gamramia or Gramaya, different Gersois over here, and what Gramamia is, there's also within each of a lot of these things, there's a number of different opinions. First of all, you have our Gemara over here. You also have a Medrash in Bereshis Rabbah that gives a similar list, but not all of the identifications there are the same as here. And within each one, you have a number of different opinions among Mephoshim, what place they refer to. In a general way, there's an explanation from the Vilna Gaon that says that that primarily the descendants of Yefes settled in Europe for the most part, the descendants of Shem in Asia, and those of Chum in Africa. But there's a lot of overlap because, for example, we're going to say the Persians are from Yefes, even though Persia, Iran, is deep in the middle of Asia. So it's not a hard and fast rule. Well, it is in Asia. It hasn't moved. What?
They're all over.
Well, they're all over. This is true, right? But their homeland is over there. Yeah. Anyway, so Goymer is a Germania or whatever. So Germania might mean Germany, and that is how the Vilna Gaon identifies it. Another what? So therefore, it would mean the Aryans in general, right? There was a different explanation. The Oda Chashalim brings a possibility. There was an ancient nation called the Sumerians. They lived in basically what's now southern Russia and Azerbaijan and that part of the world. And then they spread out from there to a number of different places. So that might be the Germania that the Gemara is talking about over here. Anyway, Mogog is a Gumsa or Candia. Gumsa would mean the place of the Goths, which are another German nation that started out in Sweden or something and eventually overspread a good part of Europe. Incidentally, worth mentioning in this connection, this that we're talking about all these nations that moved from one place to another and settled new areas, Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch has a very interesting take on it. In his times, you know, you didn't yet have, there was no country of Israel yet. Most Jews lived in Europe. And the anti-Semites there, their common line was, Jew, go back to Palestine where you belong. Now, of course, they claim the other way around, get out of there where you don't belong, whatever, anyway. But so Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch comments, he says, look at this. You know, you look at the ancestors of these various nations of Europe in our times, they didn't come from these places either. They also, you had this whole movement of nations over periods of hundreds or thousands of years who came to their places. So he says, but Goy says to you, Jew, you don't belong here. So you say to him, Mr. Goy, where exactly did your ancestors come from? So yeah, anyway. So Mogog's a Gumsa or Candia. Gumsa would be then the Goths, which are a German nation that spread over a good part of Europe. Candia would be Crete, an island in the Mediterranean, near nowadays it's part of Greece. Umodai Kmashmoy of Zumakadonia. Modai, there's two different girsois over here. Is it, and in the printed Gemaras, you also have both girsois. You have one girsa and Agoris Agra changes it to the other one. Modai Kmashmoy would mean Modai would be exactly what we think of as the country of Modai, like Paras of Modai, which is nowadays part of Iran. In those times, it was an independent country. Or Zumakadonia, or the other possibility is Modai refers to Macedonia, which is nowadays parts of northern Greece and a country north of it now called North Macedonia. Yovan Zumakadonia, or Kamashmoi. Yovan then either would mean Macedonia, which is where Alexander the Great came from and spread Greek culture all over the world, or Yovan would be Kamashmoi, the various Greek peoples. Tuval is a base Inoki. Tuval refers to a place that in later times is called base Inoki, which is nowadays in Turkey. The Gemara elsewhere mentions it in Avodah Zarah as a place where there was so much into Avodah Zarah that most calves shechted in that place, in that area, the Gemara says, were shechted in honor of Avodah Zarah. And therefore you have cheese that comes from there where they use rennet from the stomachs of those calves to make cheese. Then that cheese is also Bahana, unlike most Goyish cheeses, at least Mutar Bahana, but they are not because they use something from actual Avodah Zarah for it. Anyway, Meshech Zum Musia, Meshech, the next one, Meshech, is Musia, which is also nowadays part of Turkey. And now the Tiros, now the last one, when it comes to Tiros, Pligibar of Simoi Vrabbanon, Vamilor of Simon Vrabbanon. So you have Machloikas, which nation did Tiros found? Chad Omer Zu Turki, or base Tiryaki. One says it refers to the area called Tiryaki, which it might be related to nowadays Turkey, although primarily they explain that it means an area that's called nowadays Triki or Thrace, which is basically now parts of Turkey, Greece, Bulgaria, that whole corner of the world. Vachadoma, Zuparas, and the other opinion says that Tiras is Persia. So therefore, so according to that, then we see the Persians descend from Yefes. So now Kodesh, who was the king of Persia, then comes from Yefes. So that bears out what Rabbi Yochanan was saying before about then the second Mishmikdash was sponsored by Kodesh from Yefes, and therefore the Shechina couldn't fully rest in it. So next, while the Gemara is at it, so now we don't really need for our purpose to do, but the Gemara goes and then identifies some of the other nations that it mentions over there. Afterwards, it mentions the sons of Chum, then it mentions one of them is Cush, And within Kush, it says, Vnei Kush, Sva, V'chavila, V'savta, V'rama, V'savtacha. So let's focus particularly on two of them, Savta and Savtacha, which have very similar names. So Toni Rabbi Yosef, so Rabbi Yosef, Torah B'raisa. First of all, like we said, Tiras Zuparas, Tiras that we just said is the Persians. Savta, V'rama, V'savtacha, Toni Rabbi Yosef, what are Savta and Savtacha, which have such similar names? Sakistan Gav Yosef, Sakistan Bar Yosef. That is inner and outer Sakistan. Now you're thinking, of course, Mastama Pakistan. There's a lot of countries in that part of the world that have Stan in their names because the word Stan in Farsi and in related languages, so that means the place of. So like Afghanistan is the place of the Afghans, Pakistan is the place of the Pakis, etc. So here it would be the place of the Sakis, I guess. But whatever, where it is exactly, some people think that it's an area in what's nowadays Iran and Afghanistan. Others say it might be an area in North Africa, which maybe would fit better with the fact that it's children of Kush. Anyway, so there are two places, they're both called Sakistan, the inner and the outer, and therefore the ancestors of those places also had very similar names, Savta and Savdacha. Bein chodel chodem mea parsi, between one Sakistan and the other, there's 100 parsa, meaning, in other words, that you have the outer one, you go a distance of 100 parsa in, which is about 300 miles, in from the edge of the outer one, and you reach the edge of the inner one. Vehekefan al haparsi, the circumference of the whole area is 1,000 parsa, which is around 2,500 or 3,000 miles. Okay. Next, the Gemara continues identifying again some other places that are mentioned in those psukim. So a few psukim later, when it mentions Nimrod, so it talks about the places that he ruled over. Vatehi reishis mamlachtei Bavel. The pasuk says the beginning of his kingship was in Bavel. Ve'erech ve'akad ve'chalnei. And these three other cities, Erech, Akkad, and Kalneh, Be'eretz Shinar, which are all in the land of Shinar, which is the country of Bavel. You have a city of Bavel, and you have a country of Bavel. So another name for the country of Bavel is Shinar. Particularly, Shinar refers more to the southern part of it, mostly the area where later on, after Golus Bavel, where the Jews lived. So the southern half of it. So all of these country, all of these cities are there, and those are the ones that Nimrod first ruled over. By the way, worth mentioning, the other day there was a nice event in honor of 100 years of Daf HaYomi and also the Siyum of Seder Noshim. One of the Rosh Yeshiva who spoke over there said a vort. I don't remember if it was his own vort or he got it from somebody, but he mentioned that a drosha on this pasuk, Vati Reishis Mamlachtai, the beginning of the Melucha, the beginning of how you accept Ur Malchus Shemayim, is Bavel, by learning Talmud Bavli, the Erech, and that brings a person to have Arichus Yomim. So let's identify these places. Bavel Kamashma, Bavel is the city that in later times also was known as Bavel. Erech zu Arkesh or Arichus. Erech is a city that in later times was called Arichus. The Akkad zu Bashker, the Kalnes and Nikar or Nofer Ninfi. These were all cities that were familiar to them in Bavel. So these are all the cities that Nimrod originally ruled over. Then the pasuk continues, Mina Oretzahi Yotza Ashur. Now then it says, from that land, Ashur went out. Now Rashi explains on the pasuk, based on Medrash, that Ashur over here is the name of a person. He was one of the sons of Shem, B'nai Shem, Elam V'Ashur. And this Ashur did not want to be involved with Nimrod and his schemes, in particular with Dor HaFloga. So he left that with the Tower of Babel. So therefore he left that pasuk, Mina Oretzahi Yotza Ashur, in order to get away from them and their bad ideas. And therefore the Eibishter rewarded him that he was able to build many great cities, as it goes on to say in the pasuk, Vayivenes, Ninveves, Rechoves, Ir, and so forth. Here the Gemara is taking a different understanding of it, that the word Ashur is not only the name of a person, it's also the name of a city, which actually the Ramban and a number of other Mephoshim on the Pasuk explain that you can understand it in context of the Pasuk also. It can be that way. It can mean after Nimrod ruled over these four cities that we mentioned, Bavel, Erech, Akkad, and Kalneh, after that he went to Ashur, to the place called Ashur, and there he built more cities over there named Ninveh and Rehoboth Ir and so forth. So here the Gemara is taking that same view and saying that Ashur is the name of a place. Toni Rabbi Yotza Ashur by Yivenes Ninveh Ves Rechoves Ir Ves Kolach. Toni Rabbi Yosef, Ashur is a Silek. Ashur is the place that in later times was called Silek. In general geography, it's called Seleucia. It was a city which is in part of what's nowadays Iraq, not far from Baghdad. Then by Yivenes Ninveh, the pasuk continues that he built Ninveh. That means Kamashma, the city that in later times also was known as Ninveh. It was the capital. It was the capital of the Assyrian Empire, the famous empire of Sennacherib. It was also, of course, where Yonah went a generation earlier to get them to do tshuva. They actually have over there, by the way, they have a place near there that they call, the Arabs call it Nebi Yunus or something like that, which is their version of the word Navi Yonah. And they have supposedly that's his grave, and they go there and then they go there to daven. So that's Nineveh. Rechovas Ir is a pros de mission. Rechovas Ir refers to the place called pros de mission. So the Gemara mentions in particular in Kiddushin, it was a few days ago in Daf Yomi actually, that mission is an area in the south of Bavel, close to the Persian Gulf, where in the times of the Gemara, many Mamzerim and other Psula Yichus lived over there. So here we're saying that there was a city there called Pros de Mishun, because it was near the river Pros, and there in that city, in the times of Nimrod, was called Rechovas Ir, and either Nimrod or Ashur, as the case may be, built it. Ves Kolach zu Pros de Bursif, the next city that he built called Kolach is Pros de Bursif. Bursif is a city the Gemara mentions in a couple of places, was near the ancient city of Bavel. The Gemara actually mentions in a couple of places that at one point the names were switched around. What used to be called Bavel came to be called Bursif and vice versa. The Gemara also mentions this area of Bursif in particular is the area where the Tower of Bavel was built. And the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that there's still remains of them in their times. Anyway, the next pasuk continues that also he built Ves Resen Bein Nineveh or Bein Kolach. He also built the city of Resen between Nineveh and Kolach. And the pasuk finishes off, Hi Ha'ir HaGdolah, that is the great city. So which one of those is the great city? That the Gemara is going to explain in a minute. But first, what is Resen? Ze'ik Nisfon or Aktisfon. This is a city called Aktisfon, which is mentioned a few places in the Gemara. In general geography, it's called Ktesifon. In Gemara, you a lot of times have words from other languages that begin with two consonants in Lashon Kodesh, and in Aramaic, it doesn't really work and to have words that begin with two consonants, so they often stick in an aleph at the beginning. You have a lot of words in Lashon Kodesh, you have a lot of words in Gemara terminology that are formed that way. Here, actually, Tosfos Yeshanim says it may not be identical. It may not be identical with the Aktisfon that's mentioned in a few other places in the Gemara. So maybe it is, maybe it's not. Anyway, it was a city not far from Mechuzah, which was Rava's city. The pasuk finishes off Hi Ha'ir HaGdolah. It comes out, according to the definitions the Gemara is giving over here, it comes out that all these cities are not in one place; they're all over the place throughout the country of Bavel, throughout what's nowadays Iraq. There are, in fact, Mephoshim who explain, I think the Chizkuni on the Pasuk explains, that the Gemara is going to ask over here, which is Ha'ir HaGdolah, and the answer is it's going to be Nineveh, but actually the Chizkuni explains that actually what it is these cities were fairly close together, and he merged them all into one big city, and then that became called Ha'ir HaGdolah. But according to what the Gemara is saying over here, it doesn't seem to work out, because some of these cities are many miles from one another. Anyway, so Hi Ha'ir HaGdolah, when the Pasuk finishes off, that is the big city. Which one is it referring to? Is it referring to back to Nineveh, or is it referring to Resen? When the pasuk says that he built Resen between Nineveh and Kolach, that is the big city. So what does it mean? That Resen that the pasuk started talking about, or Nineveh that mentioned after that? Since later on in Yonah's times, the pasuk mentions that Nineveh was the great city. It was a great city to Hashem. Heviyam and Nineveh, Ir HaGdolah. Then you have to understand that in Bereishis also, Ir HaGdolah refers back to Nineveh. Now Tosfos asks the question: why is the Gemara not assuming that it might refer to Kolach? After all, the flow of the pasuk is Resen between Nineveh and Kolach. That is the big city. So why shouldn't we assume that Kolach is the big city? And Tosfos says, because then it wouldn't say he. Then it wouldn't say the word he, b'chlal. Then it would just say, ben kolach ha'ir ha'gdoyla. The fact that it adds he means it has to be referring to one of the earlier cities that it mentioned. So it's going to be either Nineveh or Resen. And since we find elsewhere that Nineveh is described as a great city, then that's the one that it refers to. Marsha points out, and Marsha points out another thing as well, that Kolach, since Nineveh is mentioned before Kolach, after all, you're saying Resen is between them, it could have just as well mentioned Kolach first. If it mentions Nineveh first before Kolach, then we have to understand between the two of them, Nineveh is larger, but you still might have, so therefore there's no question that he or Ir HaGdolah can't refer to Kolach, but it could conceivably refer to Resen, except that you have this other pasuk in Yonah that says that Nineveh was the great city. Since the Gemara is darshaning names of people and names of places over here, so the Gemara digresses to talk about another example of that. We find when the Meraglim came to Chevron, so they found giants over there. V'shama chimon sheshe v'salma v'gami yiludei ha'anok. They found over there children of the giant over there, and all the Meraglim are afraid of them. And later on, when Kole was given the area of Chevron and his inheritance, then he kicked them out of there. So why do they have those names? Tana, we learn in a Braisa. Achimon was called that Miyumon Shebe'echav. He was the strongest among his brothers. Miyumon, Meloshin Yamin, which is the right, which is the stronger hand. So Och Achimon stands for Och Yamin, the brother that has the strong right hand. Sheshai is called that. Shemesim is Eretz Kishrisus, because whenever he walked, he was so giant that whenever he walked, he like destroyed the earth underneath him. It became like furrows and like big holes in the ground, like big potholes. How do you get that from the word sheshai? So Rashi over here says, because you have a word for destruction in the pasuk hashes vashover, a pasuk in Eicha, the shirdish of that word is a shin. So therefore, the word sheshai can also be formed from that. Rashi in Sota, this Gemara is also in Sota, this Darasha on the name is also in Sota. Rashi gives over there a different explanation. The word Sheshai can be related to the word Shayish, and is in a pillar, like a marble pillar. Any place on the ground where you put a marble pillar, you're going to have a deep depression in the ground because of the weight of it, the same way. Wherever Sheshai walked, you have deep depressions in the ground from his footsteps. And Talmai, why was he called that? Shemesim, sorry, it's Tzlomim, Tzlomim, because of the same kind of idea. Wherever he walked, there were like furrows in the ground. Because again, he was so big and heavy that wherever he goes, the ground looks like it was as if it was plowed up. Dovracher, another explanation that has to do with their names. Achimon bono Anos. Achimon built a city called Anos. Sheshai bono Olush. Talmai bono Talbush. Now, what's the Dover Acha doing over here? Rashi actually takes out the word Dover Acha. It's not a different explanation. It's another fact about them. Number one, they were giants, and we explained their names. Number two, here's another fact about them, that they founded great cities. But on the other hand, Ben Yehoyada says, maybe you can keep in the word Dover Acha. The Gemara is saying another meaning, another thing they did as far as their names, not just they lived up to their names as far as breaking up the earth and everything wherever they went, but also each of them used part of his name to name his city. So Achimon used the nun, the end of his name, and put that into the name of his city, Anos. Sheshai used the first letter of his name and made that the last letter of the name of his city, Olush. And Talmai took the first letter of his name and used it as the first letter of his city, Talbush. So therefore, that would be what the Gemara is darshaning, that they use their names like that. They use parts of their names like that to name their cities. And the Gemara continues, why are they called Yelidei HaAnok? Why are they called the children of the giant? Why the word Anok specifically for giants? Shema Nikin es Achama b'keimasan, because they made the sun like look like a necklace with their height. They looked like they're so tall, it looked as though their heads are reaching up into the sky, and therefore as though the sun is like a necklace around their neck. There's a parenthetical note that's printed over here in Rashi that says something else, that Yesh Meforshim, they were so tall they could see the sun rising before anybody else because they were higher up, therefore they were able to see the horizon from further away, and vice versa when after the sun sets they could see it for longer than anybody else. So Anok would mean, because the word Anok basically means a neck, so in other words, because their neck was so high up, therefore, they'd be able to see the sun rising before anybody else and setting after anybody else. And the point is, again, the Meraglim were all afraid of them, but Kolev was not. And sure enough, when he was given that portion of Eretz Yisrael, then he had no problem kicking them out of there. Okay. So now that we talked about that the Persians are descended from Yefes and that Kurdish is descended from them, so now let's talk about, the Gemara is going to talk about a little bit about geopolitics. What's going to happen between the Romans and the Persians? Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Amar Rebbe, Asida Roimi Shetipo Biad Paras. In the future, the Romans are going to fall into the hands of the Persians. Shenemar, as you find a pasuk where Yumiya says a nevuah against Edom, and we know that Edom is the ancestor of the Romans. Lochain Shimu Atzas Hashem. He says, therefore, listen to the counsel that Hashem has done, what Hashem has decided. Asher Yoatzel Edom, that he's thought and decided about Edom. Umachshavosav Asher Choshav Al Yoshvei Seimon, and his thoughts that he's thinking about the inhabitants of Taimon. Taimon doesn't mean Yemen; it means Taimon here was an area within the country of Edom. Hashem says that I promise that the young ones of the sheep will drag them off. So as the Gemara is going to explain, the young ones of the sheep refers to the Persians, so therefore they're going to end up dragging off and destroying the Roman Empire. So the Gemara says, "Maskefel Rava or Rabba Bar Ula, Omi Mai Dehai Tziratza and Porasu." Now, where are you getting that this young sheep refers to Persia? But Pashtos, because you have in Daniel's visions when he sees various animals representing the four Malchias, the four empires that are going to rule over the Jewish people from his times until Mashiach comes. He says the Malach tells him, "Ayal Asher Reisa Balakronayim," the ram that you saw with horns, Malche Modei Foras, that refers to the kings of Modei Foras. So therefore, so the Persians, in other words, are being compared there to a ram, which is an adult sheep. So therefore, you're going to say that the sheep in Yirmiyah's Nevuah refers to the Persians. Why? Ve'ema Yavan. You could just as well say, says Rabbi Ba'ullah, it could mean the Greeks. Dichtei vat sofer asur melech Yavan. The next pasuk in Daniel, the Malach tells him that you also saw a goat, which in the vision over there, he sees the goat fighting with the ram and defeating it, representing how the Greeks overthrow the Persians. But anyway, the point is the Greeks are compared to a goat. The powerful goat is the king of Yavon, referring particularly to Alexander the Great. Goats are also in the category of tsoin. Tsoin, we know, is a general category in the Torah. That means sheep and goats. So therefore, tsiri atsoin could just as well refer to them. Well, Kisolik Rab Abba or Rav Chaviva Bar Surmiki Amra Kameha Hu Dahu Mirabon. So when Rab Abba or Rav Chaviva Bar Surmiki went up to Eretz Yisrael, he said this question over to one of the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael. Omele, so that Chacham told him, O Mandala Yoda Purusha Dekroi Moisif Tiyuvta L'Rebbe. What is somebody who doesn't even know how to understand a Pasuk? Is he asking a contradiction against the Rebbe? You should realize this Rabbi Bar Ula who asked you this question, he didn't understand things properly. He didn't realize, he thought that Tzi'iri Atzoin just means any nation that's compared to a sheep, in which case it could equally well be the Persians and the Greek. But no, my Tzi'iri Atzoin, Zutra Da'achui, means the youngest, Tzi'iri, the youngest of his brothers, the Tani Rabbi Yosef Tiras Zuparas. We just said before that Tiras, the youngest son of Yefes, from him came the Persian nation. So they're the youngest. That's what the pasuk means. That's what the pasuk means by tsiirei atzoin. Not just that they're compared to sheep, but they're the youngest out of all the descendants of Yefes. So yes, that's what the pasuk means. That Hashem is saying that Edom will be destroyed by the Persians. On the other hand, Amar Rabbi Baba Chana, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Meshum Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi. So not on the other hand, a similar thing, but for a different reason. In the future, the Romans will fall into the hands of the Persians, and there's a different reason for it. Not based on a pasuk, but based on a simple kavachomim mikdash tradition. Make a kavachomim based on what happened with the first base mikdash. The first base mikdash was built by descendants of Shem, by Shlomo HaMelech, ve'achrivuhu kastim, and the kastim, which are specifically the kastim, are a nation within Babel, but Nochanetzo in particular came from that nation, and eventually it came to be used for the whole nation of Babel. It was called the kastim. This is all talking about before Mashiach comes, yeah. So nevertheless, Noflu Kastim Biad Parsim. Eventually, what did Hashem do to the Kastim? He made them fall into the hands of the Persians, who destroyed them. So then, Mikdasheni Shebneuhu Parsim, the second Mes Mikdash, where the Persians built it, because Kodesh gave permission to build it, Ve'achrivuhu Roimiyim, and then the Romans destroyed it. Ein Adin Sheyiplu Roimim Biad Parsim. Wouldn't it be only Kavachomer that they should also be defeated by the Persians, the same way as the Kastim who destroyed the first Mes Mikdash? So yes, we should say that the Romans are going to be defeated and destroyed by the Persians, because the Persians have that schus that they built the second Mishmikdash, which the Romans themselves went and destroyed. However, on the other hand, Omer Rav, Asida Poras Shetibol B'yad Roni. On the other hand, Rav says, no, on the contrary, Persia is going to fall into the hands of Rome. Omer Leir of Kahana, Rav Asil Rav, Banoi B'yad Sturoi. Based on what we just said, the Persians built the Mishmikdash, the Romans destroyed it. Is it right that the builders should fall into the hands of the destroyers? What's the logic? So he answers them, yes, Gzeras Melechi. It's a Gzeras Mashem, that's how it is. We don't always understand how Hashem runs the world, but that's how it is. There are other explanations. What? So which countries are these today? So Rome, I mean, the Roman Empire, of course, no longer exists, but you have the whole, most of Western civilization is based a lot on Roman ideas. You look for example, even, you know, you look in the United States, you look in Western Europe, you look in other countries, they still have a lot of Roman culture is still part of their thing. You also have, of course, you know, they have the Via Vos Atuma in Rome with all of his people, all over the world. So they're also a remnant of Malchus Edom. As far as Paras, the Pashtus, it means the Persians. I mean, the truth is, Ben Yehoyada points out, I mean, after the times of the Gemara, you know, a couple hundred years after the times of the Gemara, Persia was overrun by the Arabs and they became Muslim. So he says, not necessarily. So everything we're saying in the Gemara here may have happened already in some other way, or it may yet happen in some other way that we don't even know. Not necessarily are we referring to the original countries of Rumi and Persia respectively. Historically, with that said, in the times of the Rabbanon Sivaroi and the Uli Gaonim, the Romans and the Persians did fight each other a tremendous amount, and eventually, both of them came pretty close to destroying each other's empires. And that's when the Arabs had the chance to come in and invade and take over large parts of what had been both of them. So really, what the Gemara is saying over here, that the Persians are going to fall into the hands of the Romans, and the Romans into the hands of the Persians, really, to a certain extent, that's already been the sky. Anyway, so he's saying Gzeiras Melechi, this is how it is. Now, there are a few explanations of what this means, Gzeiras Melechi. So one explanation is it means exactly that. Hashem decides how things happen, and we don't always understand it. But there are other points as well. There is an explanation that's brought in Mefarshim that it means, after all, how is it that the Persians sponsored the building of the second Mikdash in the first place? It wasn't because they themselves decided to. Hashem put it in Kodesh's mind to do that. So to a certain extent, they don't deserve all the credit for it. So there is that, although they say not really, because the fact is, you know, he still made the choice to do the right thing. A person does have, to that extent, he has Bechir HaChofshis, and he has to be rewarded for it. There's also a point... Yad Yosef brings over here on a side that an Iyun Yaakov mentions the same point. The Gemara in Gittin tells us there came a point in Jewish history in the times of the Amoraim when actually the Romans were better for us than the Persians. Usually we think of the Romans destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, they killed the Asar Harugei Malchus, they tried to outlaw Yiddishkeit, whatever. But nevertheless, there came a point when the Persians were even worse. The Gemara mentions in a few places a group called the Chavz, who were basically the Persian Galochim. They eventually took over the country, and they were very fanatical about their religion. And for a while, they were making life very hard for the Jews in Persia and in Bavel. And in that sense, Rabbi Baba Chana says in a Gemara in Gittin, Hashem, if you're not going to put us under your direct protection, then put us under the protection of Esav instead, because we're better off with them. What? That's we're going to get to that in a minute. Wait. Anyway, that's another meaning of Gzeiras Melech, is that after all, the Persians eventually turned out to be not so great either. Ikadamri Omalahu, others say that what he told them is Inunami Kosasri Beknishta. The fact is the Persians also tear down shuls, so they're not necessarily such great guys either. So therefore they deserve to be punished, and therefore it is a right thing that Hashem can make, that they'll fall into the hands of the Romans. So Gemara says, Tani Nami Hocha, we learn similarly in a Braisa. Asida Poras Shetipo B'yad Roimi, Chodur Desasri Beknishta, first of all, because they tear down shuls, V'od Gzeiras Melech, Yishib L'boinim, B'yad Soistrim. Second of all, it's Gzeiras Melech, that yes, it's Gzeiras of Hashem, that the ones who built the Beis Hamikdash will end up falling into the hands of the destroyers. Ben Yehoyada actually points out another point as well in this Gzeiras Melech. He says, you know, you have Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, that mentions the Psukim in Sefer Ezra, when they tell about the instructions for building the second Beis Hamikdash, it mentions that Kodesh's instructions included that they should build three rows of stones and then one row of wood. And the Gemara explains, why are they putting wood into the walls? And the idea is because Kodesh was thinking to himself, in case the Jews rebel against me, then we can easily set the walls on fire and they'll burn and then fall down because of the wood. So therefore, it's not like they had such pure motivations in the first place. So therefore, the Eibishter can show them up for that and show more openly what the evil intent that they had in the first place by causing them to fall into the hands of the Romans.
Wood inside of the bricks.
Something Mark explains over there that it was wood.
Like it would burn the whole place down with just one row of wood.
Yeah, but if you have like every fourth row is wood or whatever, yeah, and you had it was pretty big, like this, the wood is gone, it destabilizes the whole thing. The Omer of Yehuda Amarab, Ein Ben David Ba Ad Shetivshet Malchus Roimi Tishach Hadashim B'chol Olam Kolay. Mashiach won't come until Malchus Roimi dominates the entire world for 9 months. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, well, so therefore, in other words, you have this idea that the Persians have to fall into the hands of the Romans, and therefore the Romans will have undisputed rulership for 9 months. So now Rav is saying the Romans will take over the Persians, right? So that's what we say. That's what we said. First, we said Rebbe said the Persians will take over the Romans, and now Rav is saying the other way around, right? Ultimately, that's what I'm saying. Historically, you had both. You had at one point where the Persians almost conquered the what was left of the Roman Empire. You had a point where the Romans almost conquered the Persian Empire. They both weakened each other to the point where then the Arabs had room to move in over there in the early time of the Goyim. And even nowadays, you have the so which one is better? Each one in its own time. I mean, you know. You have Rabbi Baba Chana in that Gemara in Gittin saying that there are times when we're better off under Edom. And on the other hand, you know, sometimes we are, sometimes we're better off. On the other hand, you have a Gemara, for example, that says that Hashem realized that Hashem knew the Jewish people are not going to be able to withstand the harsh Xeris of Edom and therefore of Rome. And therefore, by the first base of Mekdash, Hashem sent them into Golos in Bavel, which was a much more lenient Golos. So different times, things go, there are ups and downs. There are ups and downs everywhere, basically. Ultimately, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, by the way, says Marsha refers to over here. The Gemara says these two powers, the Romans and the Persians, in some form, they're going to continue to exist until Mashiach comes. So now he says what the Gemara is saying over here then is Rav would be saying shortly before Mashiach comes, the Persians will fall into the hands of the Romans, and then shortly after that, 9 months after that, Mashiach will come. Has it happened? I mean, it all depends how you look at it. It all depends how you look at it, I guess. What are the Persians nowadays? What are the Romans nowadays? You have to figure out. According to Rav, we're here. Yeah. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "Lachen yitnem ad esyer leida yolada." Therefore, Hashem is going to give them over into the hands of the goyim until the time when a woman gives birth, which is 9 months, the usual length of a pregnancy. The yeser echav yishuvan al bnei yisrael begamer, and then the rest of his brothers, the rest of the aseres hashvatim, who went into Golos long ago, will join up with the rest of their brothers, Yehuda and Binyamin, and Mashiach will come. So looking at it that way, then so you have that there has to come a point where. We can see it, yeah. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So on the one hand, it's true. On one level of it, you can say that America and Western Europe are much more powerful. On the other hand, you can say in some ways, though, on the other hand, you see they're kind of falling apart. So really, whatever. That's Mashiach can come right now. We don't need to wait the 9 months. We've had a few thousand times 9 months already in Golos. We don't need another 9 months. Yeah. Anyway, Yom Yom Mashiach Golach Tetzayin Cheshvan. The Pasuk says in Zechariah that in Mashiach's times, 10 people from each of the nations will grab hold of the corners of a Yid's garment and say, we want to go with you. And Rashi explains, based on Gemara and Menachos, it means that every Yid will have 2,800 goyim who want to serve him, because there are four corners on the tzitzis. Each one, there's going to be 10 men from each of 70 nations, so 700 for each corner, so 2,800 altogether. So the Rebbe says in a Sicha, so you're going to ask, what is a Yid going to do with 2,800 servants? So that'll be one of the questions we can leave for Mashiach to answer, and he'll answer it.
Quite a lot of them.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be in the bathrooms and in the kitchen, but still you don't need 2,800.
Okay. Moving along in halachas of having a goy do work for you on Shabbos, what kind of work can you have those 2,800 avodim do for you on Shabbos and whatnot? So you have kalim that are used specifically for doing malach. So he gives an example over here, for example, a plow. A modern example would be a car, let's say. So you're not allowed to rent it to a goy on Erev Shabbos. Now, it is true we don't have a mitzvah of Shvisas Kevin. Bais Shammai holds in a Mishnah and several Mishnayos and Shabbos, you're not allowed to have your kelim do work for you on Shabbos either. They would say, for example, let's say that you couldn't turn on your oven on Shabbos before Shabbos and keep it on Shabbos mode, because your kelim would be doing malacha for you on Shabbos. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is like the silver that's electric. But he's paying you rent for it, and he rented on an Erev Shabbos, so therefore it looks as though he's your shliach. So therefore, you're not allowed to rent it to him on Erev Shabbos. Now, on Thursday, you would be allowed to. As far as lending it to him, that you would be allowed, even on Erev Shabbos, even if it's something that you use for malacha, as long as he takes it out of your house or out of your property before Shabbos begins. Now, what about you make, let's say, for example, you make a deal with the goy. I'll lend you my thing this time, and you'll lend me your thing another time. Such a thing as mutter, that's not considered like a rental. You also, when it comes to renting him things that are not used for malacha, that you're allowed to rent him even on Erev Shabbos, again, as long as he takes it off your property before Shabbos.
Is it understood?
No, so Bais Shammai holds, based on the Gemara explains over there in Shabbos, that Bais Shammai learns that there's such a thing as Shvisas Kalin. The Gemara actually mentions, according to Bais Shammai, how could you even light Shabbos candles? And the answer is basically you'd have to declare them Hefker before Shabbos. Lawsid Lava, you know, we say Aloha will be like Bais Shammai, so then I guess we'll have to do things differently. Maybe then we can use the 2,800 servants to deal with those things. But right now, the Aloha is like Bais Hillel, and the Aloha is there's no issue of Shvisas Kalim, where again, there's not an issue of the Goy looking like he's your Shliach or other issues. You have other issues with Kalim doing Malacha on Shabbos. For example, you have the concept called Avsha Milsa. You have when you have a Kalim makes a loud noise, then that's also on Shabbos independent of even you turn it on before Shabbos. So you have issues with that. But you have different things like that. There were early on when timers first started to be used, there were some poskim who were against the idea of using timers on Shabbos because it makes it look like you turned it on Shabbos. If nothing else, it looked like Marisayan. As they became more popular and nowadays it's an obvious thing that everybody knows what timers are, so therefore there's no Marisayan in it and there's much less of an issue. But even then they talk about that maybe it should only be for things that you really need for comfort, like air conditioners and things like that. Not let's say, for example, to put your not to put your radio or your TV on a timer and then in order to watch it on Shabbos.